Hi, everyone. Welcome to Two Black Girls, our bi-monthly podcast featuring two black girls. Today, Nicole and I will be talking about just the shady aftermath of all of the things that have been going on just in our world, in our nation, in our country. So last week, we talked about just what it means to be black in America in 2020. And we really thought through just like some of the microaggressions that we hear and experience at the daily level. And today we want to really bring it back home and connect that to just what we typically talk about as it relates to being a young black professional. And so we'll be talking a little bit more about how the aftermath of all of the chaos, to be quite honest, has or could possibly affect us in corporate spaces. Today, we're really thinking about just some of the effects that have come out of all of this. I know that it's just been in the media constantly about how, you know, folks are calling for the renaming of or the pulling of like Angel Mama and Uncle Ben products. You know, what do you think just about all of that that's going on? Is it worth it? Is it time? Like, does it connect actually to the real cause? Like, what do you think?
I think that we're in a kind of a difficult space with white America, so to speak, because they, not that I'm giving any excuses for them, but it's almost like if you're not participating or you don't have some type of response to Black Lives Matter, then in some way you're against it. But if you do have a response, it has to be an appropriate response or else you're against it. So I don't really know that things like removing Angel Mama and Uncle Ben really answered the Black Lives Matter movement, because again, I thought that was more for the killing of black men and police reform, but it's something that can be done as some type of appeasement to say, we see you, we hear your discomfort. And that's the wrong word, but I can't think of the word I want. And this is a longstanding issue that probably has been swept under the rug several times. So here's our response. The question will be, will that be enough? And how does that translate to answering the call that we have for equality? The actual act itself is nice, I guess, but is it really going to change what we need changed? And that's the standing answer right now. I mean, you know, I would love to ask a Quaker Oats or Quaker employee, you know, does that do it for you? I mean, you see these boxes printed with Angel Mama's face and that changes. Does that make you feel better? But I mean, you almost get kind of cynical once you get into that. I also don't want our listeners to get caught up in that, because while the image itself is wrong, please understand the history behind that image. She was paid to do that, and she was paid handsomely to do that. So while the image itself is not one we necessarily want to remember, that woman herself was successful in modeling for that product. So we just have to understand everything that's going on. And again, I don't really know if these type of movements from corporate America fizzles out, but it's something. I mean, if you're one of those protesters that wanted to see something, there you go. It's something. But you know, for those of us, me, you, that continuously work in the different aspects of corporate America, educational America, it's going to take a little bit more than changing the image of what I buy at the grocery store.
I agree, Nicole. I think that it's like a Band-Aid for the issue, because we talked about this last time, just about how, you know, I feel like they sit in these rooms and they try to think about what can we give them to kind of shut them up, but it's not necessarily a solution to the actual issue. I do think, like, I agree with you when you're saying, like, by changing the box, like, that may or may not make me feel better.
by not having to see Angel Mama on the shelf or Uncle Ben on the shelf. And to be quite honest, I purchased Angel Mama and Uncle Ben because I think those are the better products that offer those types of like seasonings and blends and stuff. But I think like for me, as someone who believes they understand what Black Lives Matter, aside from the police brutality piece, because of, you know, just the unfair treatment of Black people by law enforcement. So when you also think about these other organizations who are fighting for Black rights in that way, I would think that a more appropriate solution from white America or from corporate America would actually be like, not only are we going to change, you know, the label and the title of these products, but we're also going to make sure that products that cater to Black people are owned by Black people. Like, I think that's like the bigger issue, because even when you think about like, they have all these like articles and stuff out now, like as natural women, you know, we're always trying to look for the best product for our natural hair. And a lot of the best products, quote unquote, or a lot of the products that get a lot of like the celebration or a lot of the publicity are actually owned by white people. You know, so it's like, wait a minute, Black women and Black men can't come up with a natural product to help Black hair? Like, how are we still monetizing? How are white people still making money off of the Black products? Because they're catered to Black people, they're catered to Black hair. So how are white people still making money off of products that are catering to Black people? I think those are the larger, like, systemic issues that need to be addressed, because it doesn't, this goes back to that whole idea of like the looting and stuff like that. Like, yes, your anger is out. This one store was, you know, ruined, or these few stores within this one company were ruined. But that doesn't change the fact that the white people are still cashing checks every single week. And as Black people, we are still not cashing checks every single week. So what other like systemic, legislative, you know, like moves need to be made to make this lasting change and this lasting impact, so that 5-10 years from now, we're not having the same problems because we're still at the short end of the stick, due to just like the racial issues that are going on in the country.
Yeah, I would definitely like to see more transparency between the products, like natural hair products, and the different foods and stuff that are out. And again, you see more of that at the smaller, on the grocery side anyway, you see more of that on the smaller ethnic mom and pop type food shops. But I would like to see more transparency between products outside of just stripping the outside picture, because, you know.
And transparency in terms of like ownership, I feel like, as well as like board, like who are the people on your board? Because I remember that was a big push when Beyonce was partnering, when she was trying to find like an athletic company to partner with, and she chose Adidas because Adidas actually had diversity on their board and all the other people had like all white people, and she like, I didn't see myself represented on your board, so I don't want to like, you know, bring you business, like, because wherever Beyonce goes, you know, people gonna go. We should have access to who owns you. We should have access to, or at least the information, not necessarily the person. I think that's kind of scary. And we should have access to like where your money is going, because all of these companies are donating all the time. Like, now we're seeing that you're donating $1.3 million to NAACP or, you know, whatever. I shouldn't have to search for that information if you want to continue to have a customer base in the Black community. Like, that should be something that you are eagerly wanting to share with your clientele. And I feel like this goes back to Chick-fil-A. Like, you know, the Alphabet Group hates Chick-fil-A because the president or owner, whatever he calls himself, is so openly against LGBTQ plus communities.
Yes. Okay. Very Christian based is how he
is. But he, at least you know where he stands. So at least you know exactly, this is where my money is going. This is who I support. This is what I believe, you know? And so like, he's giving them an, or all people, to be honest, all the information they need to be able to make an educated decision about if they will or will not continue to support his company. Like, I support that. I don't necessarily support his beliefs, but I do support the fact that he's unapologetic about what he likes, what he doesn't like, what he supports, what he doesn't support, you know, because then that gives people an honest chance. Whereas a lot of these other companies, they hide behind a lot of the racist practices that they do because they still want people to support them. And I think that's the bigger issue. Like, I feel like that's what leaders are trying to get accomplished. There may be a breakdown in terms of like an understanding as to how to get that accomplished. But I do feel like the bigger goal is we want transparency to happen with all of this.
I will say, as far as like you mentioned Chick-fil-A, I do think that if anybody's been paying attention, I think he's taken it a little far with this Black Lives Matter thing, because now his whole thing is we need to ask for forgiveness as white people for how we've treated Black people, and we need to be like doing things to show that, you know, we have a better attitude and that we're going to do better. And some of the things he's done, like, you know, shining shoes, is, it's a bit cynical and outlandish for me. So I'm hoping that it doesn't take that kind of turn, because I don't know. I guess he means well, but, you know, I don't need a white person to shine my shoes to feel better about Black Lives Mattering. I just...
That's not reparations to you?
That's not... Right. That's not...
it's... But he can't, I mean, but to be honest, like, he can't afford to piss off the Black community and piss off the alphabet community. He can't, he needs one of us. So if he's already dug his heels into, you know, pissing off one group, he can't, like, that's way too much money he would be leaving on the table, to be quite honest. So he's going to do whatever he feel like he needs to do, which I feel like a lot of companies are doing. Companies are going to say and do whatever, like a lot of these ads that we've, even when I look at it, like these huge companies keep coming up with all these commercials now to let us know we've committed $500,000 to this and we've committed $1 million to that. And I've just been so unimpressed because y'all are so wealthy. Like you committing $500,000 over the course of 4 years is really nothing. You know, I think at this point, the only, well, one, I'll say I'm biased. I love Target. So I was so sad when people were burning it down. So I think like Target to me, and unless I'm wrong, y'all could, because I'm acknowledging that I have blinders when it comes to Target. But I think that Target did a great job, because even when all the looting happened, they immediately came out about how they support Black communities and Black families and how they were still going to pay people and they weren't going to penalize their customers, you know, their employees and stuff like that because of people who were rightfully angry. Like, I feel like that's great. I feel like that's what you're supposed to say as a company. So Target has impressed me, and IKEA, really, like, they are putting in some money to Black educational spaces. They're donating to like Black college funds, the NAACP. They're donating to like the police brutality causes. Like, they are about it. And they're like, we're doing these things because we immediately compiled comprised a internal like team of our folks who identify in these spaces, and we listen to them say, throwing money at us is not enough. You need to also have educational resources, have training, have this, that, and the other. And so we're making that commitment to making sure that all of our employees feel like they're valued in our company, and all of our employees feel like we value these causes as a company, you know. And we're going to start looking at our external partners, like people that we ship to or ship from, or who supply our products. Like, we're looking at their practices. If they don't also support the movement, then we're not going to partner with them anymore. Like, I feel like that's the level of commitment that should be made, because if everybody is not holding everybody accountable, what's the point?
Yeah. And I can appreciate a holistic approach like that, as opposed to just piecemealing patches, is what I'll call it. Because, you know, if you listen to some of the same type speeches or the same type protests from like the 60s or the 70s or something like that, we're not really saying a bunch of different things. And so that lets me know that the response over the years has been patches. And so, you know, I need companies that are going to take a holistic approach, big names, little names, moms and pops, like a holistic approach as to how we're really going to come together and correct this. And so, you know, efforts are appreciated, but I really want to see all hands on deck, so to speak. So I can appreciate what IKEA is doing, because they're looking at every piece of their value chain and how it's affected or disadvantaged minorities.
So have you seen, so outside of that example, have you seen, I guess in your own workplace or in spaces that you have access to, any changes like that, like similar changes around like adding training or diversifying staff or, you know, anything like that since the aftermath?
We have a learning and diversity section, segments, team that pushes out different classes and e-training all the time. And so now, I guess, as a direct result of, you know, what's always been happening, they pushed out more African-American history, I'll use that word, and inclusion type e-classes. They've created resource groups, like there's an African-American employee resource group now. There's an executive diversity committee now. And, you know, it's kind of fresh, so I don't really know how effective all of this is. But it looks good that it's being created, and it looks good that the E classes are being pushed. And they're encouraging open dialogue, is how they like to word it. They're encouraging open dialogue amongst employees now. So I don't know if that means they want white people to feel comfortable asking Black people questions, or if they want Black people to feel comfortable expressing to white people, to be determined. And they've launched several 1 hour open calls, so to speak. So like, you know, my overall department within the bank had a call, and I think like the mortgage sector of the bank had a call, and the banking sector of the bank had a call, to where, you know, those employees within that sector could get on, express how they felt, and, you know, kind of just put it out there, so to speak. Kind of like an open mic for employees, mainly the Black ones, but they can't really word it like that. So to be determined as to whether all that has been effective. But those are the types of things that are beginning to be rolled out. I think our board actually sent out an email saying, you know, we've seen the deaths, you know, we're saddened by it. We're, you know, we're here with you. We're encouraged to be, you know, board members of such a diverse team, and, you know, whatever you need us to do. The CEO has come out with something, an open letter. I mean, those types of things are beginning to happen. So we'll see what actions come of it. But some of the employees were satisfied with just the acknowledgement. You know, at least they're watching what's going on. At least they've had an appropriate response. It hasn't been 2 or 3 or 4 weeks later. You know, we're hearing from you almost immediately after an incident. Unfortunately, there's been back-to-back incidents, but at least, you know, right after the George Floyd thing, within the same week, I'm hearing from upper management, I'm hearing from the board to kind of say, you know, we're acknowledging what's going on. So, and of course, Juneteenth was a big thing. So they have made that a paid holiday within my company. So I don't quite know how I feel about that, but it's a day of purpose is what they've dubbed it. So, you know, if you don't take that actual day, you take 8 hours of another day and really go and commit to learning or doing or helping, you know, African-American community. So we'll see how that works. I actually took my day of purpose last Friday. And so, you know, we'll see how that goes in the coming years. But that's me in the banking sector. So I know for sure they've had like a widespread response across the industry. How does it look in education? What, I mean, you yourself are part of the diversity where you are. So how's that looking?
Quite disappointing, to be honest. It is, it's interesting. I keep hearing, you know, all these companies are making these paid Juneteenth days and things like that, and taking these stances. And I do work for a department or for a program that specifically works to address equity, specifically around the areas of like racial, or I guess racism, and how that has affected access, opportunity, socioeconomic status, and educational opportunities. So working for an organization like that, the assumption would be that we would have these statements made and these, you know, Juneteenth holidays and stuff. Like, to be honest, we should be like the trailblazers of this work, but we are not. I did not get Juneteenth off. I took Juneteenth off, but I didn't get it off. It was a paid day. Like even hearing you say that, like upper management, like acknowledge like the deaths and stuff like that was definitely a grievance that I had with my leadership, because I didn't hear from my leadership. And so after the fact, you know, a few weeks later, when we had an already scheduled meeting, he shared that he needed time to process and he was grieving, and he just stepped away and took some days because it's just been an emotional toll, and he has Black children. And so, you know, he has this fear of like when his boy rides his bike, he doesn't like his son riding his bike anymore. He'd rather his son be in the yard playing basketball, because at least he knows where he is and where he's around, which I understand. I do think that like there is a lot of trauma, like to be a Black leader during times like this has to be difficult, especially when you do have children, because there is this just fear that comes from, if I can't see you, I can't protect you, you know? So I can like, I mean, I don't have kids, but I feel like I can sympathize. Empathy is not the right word because I don't have children. So I feel like I can like sympathize with that for sure. It is though frustrating as an employee, that, you know, you don't hear things like that from leadership. Like I do know that people are human and they need to process through things, breathe through things and stuff like that. But as an employee, I am looking to leadership to say, this is our stance. And I think, and in our work, we just had a training for all of our teachers. And I was on the phone with one of my teachers yesterday for like an hour, because she still feels like she doesn't know how to have these conversations with her students. And she's like, what am I supposed to say? Like, what do we believe? What is our stance? Which is valid. What is our stance? You know, like we're getting emails all the time from all these corporate people and stuff like that, who have these very clearly outlined beliefs and opinions about the work and stuff like that. And ours are still very jumbled. I think part of that is because they're a lot, most of us are Black people who are doing this work. And so we're having to work and grieve and work simultaneously. But it definitely is a little frustrating, because we haven't really gotten it together as it relates to just organizing ourselves in that way. Now, my program works within a larger system. So the larger system has made a stance. Still no Juneteenth off, but the larger system has at least like said, we don't agree with this. We understand that it's difficult being Black, you know, in America and stuff like that. And so because of that, we're now offering, we already had a diversity office, but now the office is offering like these weekly luncheons and trainings and, you know, just spaces for Black people to just come together. A coworker and I laughed because we send out these like daily, the system sends out like these daily blasts, like news blasts. And so there were a couple where it was just filled with Black people. We were like, oh, y'all really want us to make sure we know Black people work here, you know? So it was just like, right now, this is when you just happen to find good news about Black people, because Black people are complaining about, you know, not feeling appreciated or valued or a part of the system. So there's definitely been like small things that have happened. I think that I do work in higher ed. And so the focus has mostly been around making sure that Black students feel good and comfortable, which I support. I think that it's going to take for folks to figure out how to make that feel a little bit more authentic before they start looking at like, what does it mean to be a staff member or a faculty member who is Black in this space? Like, I definitely think that'll be the last thing that happens. It's just a matter of like continuing to try to like it's exhausting, like continuing to try to like model responses, because people are looking at us, especially, you know, so like continuing to like try to model responses and model beliefs and all of these different things, while also just dealing with just like it being in your face and being somebody who's directly, you know, affected. Because I don't necessarily know the folks who just have been murdered unjustifiably, but just as a Black person, like, it's triggering, you know, to constantly. And I was thinking about this the other day. I can't imagine. I guess I kind of can, because I did, you know, I did know Sandy when the whole Sandra Bland thing happened. She was my profite. But I can't imagine having someone important to me murdered, and then having to constantly see their face everywhere and hear people talking about it everywhere because it has become a national attention, you know, like a national news topic. Like, so on one end, it's like, I do believe in fighting for things like this. Like, that is fundamentally who I am as a person. So on one end, I'm like, yes, this needs to happen. Awareness needs to come about. Like, people need to have this thrown in their face so that they start to like make these changes and stuff like that. And since, you know, the death of Floyd, that changes have been being made, you know what I mean? So like, on one end, I feel like that's a positive, but to really try to empathize and understand the perspective of the family and the friends and the community that were so invested in him as an individual, like, that has to be so unbearable, to not be able to ever get to a point where you are mentally or emotionally or spiritually able to like accept the death of someone, because it's constantly being brought up. I don't know. I think there's got to be, I wish that we got to a point as a society where like we did put it in people's faces in the beginning, so that these other things started to happen. Like, it triggered this like domino effect of these other things that we're talking about and stuff like that. And then we could take him out of the equation, so that the family and the like the close knit people could actually grieve properly, you know, and then the conversation continued, but it's no longer about George Floyd, George Floyd, George Floyd. Now it's about like, there are so many injustices happening with Black people. This is what needs to happen to, like, these are the solutions, or these are the requests that we're making, you know, for these things to no longer happen. I wish at some point as a world, and I feel like this is an issue in all communities. It's not just white people doing this. It's not just Black people doing this. Like, everybody is like, George Floyd, you know, and the same with Breonna Taylor. I can't imagine what her family is going through. So at some point, like, saying their name does need to stop. And then the focus, I think, unpopular opinion, the focus then should go to, what are the systems that need to be changed? What's the legislation that needs to be changed? Who are the people that need to be rotated out? Who are the, you know, like, stuff like that? Because I want us to, I think it's great that like these universities have been offering full scholarships, and what is it, Streisand, Barbara gave the stocks to George Floyd's daughter and stuff like that. Like, I think those are great things. I also think, though, like, as a human person, if something like this were to happen to my brother or my dad or my partner or whatever, like, I would want you to stop talking about him, because you don't know him, and let me grieve him the way that I need to grieve him, and process this experience the way that I need to process this experience. And because I don't want the cause to be wrapped up in him as an individual, because it's bigger than that. That's my tangent.
Well, I can agree with that. I think I'll take it one step further to say, I don't think that the families are able to properly grieve. And I also think that it's almost a slap in the face that if George Floyd has made such a wave and has exposed such injustice, why was there a Breonna Taylor? So if Trayvon Martin made such a splash and exposed such injustice, why was there a George Floyd? And so for me, it's like, if you are saying these things, and if you are making their death that big, and if it is wrapped up in the movement, then let it be powerful enough that somebody else doesn't have to go through what I'm having to go through. But because the next time I look up, it's another family and another name and another Black man, it's almost like, are you even listening? Did this death mean as much as you said it meant for there to just be another name on the list, and not even months apart, sometimes days apart? How do we get past this? Not, you know, because at this point there's gotta be, and it's an unfortunate club to be in, but there's gotta be a, oh, your family member was shot too club. I mean, seriously. And so you have them coming together because they share the same bond and they share the same lack of being able to grieve properly. But who wants that membership? You know, it's an unfortunate space to be in. And I'm like you, there's no amount of empathy, sympathy, understanding that I could possibly have, because I just could not understand to have that splashed. And on the flip side of that, where you have people who mean well with the murals and the posters and the t-shirts, it's a steady reminder of what I don't have, what's missing, what was taken before its time, what fight we're fighting. So I can never even close myself up in a box. You know, you have the type of grievers that just block it out, and that's how they get ahead. You can't even have that type of grieving, because here it is yet again. And so my hope for those families to at least give some type of respect, the best thing white people can do, Black people can do, minorities can do for the movement, is to make it work so that at least those families can say, okay, this happened, but it caused change, you know, but it caused permanent turnaround. And until we get to that point, I think it serves as somewhat of a waste that we keep laying Black lives down and we're not changing anything. So, you know, I'm in agreement with you. I don't want to see another name on the list, but it's going to take a lot of change and a lot of turnaround and a lot of awareness. And so, you know, my hope would be for, you know, companies like mine to continue to push that awareness. And, you know, like yours, that the staff gets to a point to where they have that awareness and that education. But like you said, all the way down to the students, that's who we really need to be reaching. And so, you know, we'll continue to see where this push goes. We'll continue to follow this push. But as of right now, you know, I wasn't satisfied on the last podcast. I'm not satisfied on this podcast. I'm more aware, but I'm not satisfied. So we'll see where this goes. And I'll hold Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben close to my heart, because, you know, those were my products too. I really think they're going to go in and change the recipe, but that's just me.
Even if they do, though, now you have a Master P rice.
Well,
seasoned white rice and seasoned brown rice. Ooh,
yeah,
rice options.
I do. I have the trap snacks, don't I? But you know what? As ridiculous as that sounds, I'm glad to see that he's taken that and pushed it. For because his idea, his theory was exactly what you said earlier in the podcast. We can do this ourselves. We can push this ourselves, and you'll know who's behind the product. So I won't eat a trap snack, but I can respect the logic and the push that he's beginning to make with We Can Be Black Entrepreneurs as well.
I don't want you to sleep on the wrap snacks now. The Migos ones are quite delicious.
Are they really?
Yes, the wrap snacks are actually pretty good.
Okay. I may have to try one then.
Pretty good. So I feel, you know, some type of way when I'm seen with them, but they actually taste great. That's my own issues. So. Okay. Well, so Nicole, what you got for us in the financial world for today?
So my financial tip, because finance is what I do, is it's a tip reminder today. So we've had COVID-19 going. Rona has been around for months now. I'm sure some of you have lost count. And a lot of the things that were implemented at the beginning, student loan payment deferment for your federal loans, mortgage deferment that's been put in place by a lot of the mortgage companies, if it was government backed, maybe even utility deferrals, or, you know, they were pushing back cutoffs, notices and disconnections, the stimulus checks that came out, the extra $600 federal pandemic money, all of those care package things that came top down. I want everyone to be reminded that we are coming up on the end of some of that stuff. I know me personally, I've already received an email from my utility company saying, oh, by the way, disconnections will start back in July. You know, you're starting to see legislation go back and forth about maybe another care package, but that's with the mindset that things like the extra $600 in unemployment is expiring at the end of July. You know, the student loan question hasn't come up yet, but definitely with August coming, you're starting to see some back to school conversations and parents voting on whether they want their child back in the classroom or distance learning. So this financial tip is more of a reminder that you need to be aware that these things don't last forever. We are coming to the end of some of these things, and it's time to take a look at that budget again. You know, in March, we were kind of in a bare bones budget going into April. And with the stimulus check, some of us were catching up on things. Some of us were buying extra things. Some of us were padding our savings accounts. So now's a good time to revisit that budget, kind of see, you know, what's needed. If you are opting for your child to do distance learning, do they have the computer that they need? Do you have the Wi-Fi that you need? If you're in a position where you're still struggling, are you making those phone calls to push back some of the benefits that you've been getting? You know, it's time to revisit and make sure you're on track. And if you're not on track, taking those steps you need to get on track, because the promise of extra is not guaranteed. So I'll definitely be looking at my numbers. Sherelle, you need to be looking at your numbers. And, you know, we'll see what happens in the coming weeks.
Great. Thank you, Nicole, for that. Okay, so we'll shift into Sherelle's corner, where I'm sharing gems to make us better. So today I've decided to return to my book that I like, A Year of Positive Thinking, Daily Inspiration, Wisdom, and Courage. And I've actually found two excerpts that I would like to read. They didn't happen in this order, actually, but I'm going to read them in this order. So the first is an exercise in forgiveness. Forgive yourself. Whatever you did is done. Especially forgive yourself for all that you've taken responsibility for that you didn't actually do. You can't make anyone feel anything. You did the best you could. Forgive yourself and move forward. The second one I'd like to read is titled Being Thankful. Gratitude allows you to temporarily step away from life's struggles. As you wake up each day, name 5 things you are thankful for. Write them in a bedside journal. Consider sharing this list with others, both online and in person. So those two in particular, I wanted to read because I think that, I know just me personally, I've been feeling a lot of feelings of guilt for a lot of different reasons, that are actually, it's unreasonable. The guilt that I've been experiencing or feeling has been unreasonable, but I'm so hard on myself. And so I've allowed myself to get into that mental space. And so it was important for me when I read that for me to just, especially the part about forgiving or forgiveness, especially when it says like, you know, forgive yourself for even the things that you take responsibility for that you had nothing to do with. Cause I think that's super easy for people to do, but I think especially women, and I think even more especially Black women, like we take responsibility for things and we harbor emotional responses, that are not healthy for us because we are taking on so much weight for other people or other people's actions and things like that. And so I think sometimes it's just helpful to hear aloud that it's okay to forgive yourself. I was trying to think of a different word, but y'all get where I'm going. I think, and then the second piece around just being thankful and showing gratitude. So that one in particular talks about, you know, creating a journal and maybe sharing it. You have folks who talk about having like your gratitude jar every day. You put something, some type of like appreciation that you put in your jar, or when big things happen. Some people talk about having like a gratitude jar whenever you get a raise or a promotion, or you have a great date night or something like that, and you put that in so that in times of difficulty, you can go and return to that space and really remember all of the positive things so that we're not staying in these ruts. And I think they're both equally important. I think it's important that we are kind to ourselves. And I think it's important that we are intentionally appreciative of the fact that we wake up every morning and we are blessed, and blessings look differently. But I mean, for the most part, we're breathing, we're healthy, we're alive, especially during this time where people are literally dying every single day. And so just slowing down and breathing in all of that goodness that God is continuing to put into our lives. So that's my feel good moment for the day, Nicole.
Well, I do feel good. Thank you. So we are signing out of this session. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Hopefully we'll have some type of updates on the way the world is turning. And remember to manage your 24. You've got 24 good hours in a day. You should sleep 8 of them, but for the other 16, manage them well. Be nice to people. Forgive yourself. And we'll catch you guys in 2 weeks.
Bye.